Right, my next guest joining me is an Irish rock solo artist, Arar, who has not only released a new EP called Whiskey and Honey, but is also regarded a forerunner of the genre rock step. Morning, Dara.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
We're all right, not too bad at all. Keeping our heads above and positive, smiling through as you do.
Exactly, that's what we're trying to do on the show this morning, kind of play some positive music and, yeah, just try and take our minds off everything that's going on and just refocus on something else.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's what our job is to do, really, is lift spirit, and, you know, as Vera Lynn once did.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to ask you firstly, can you tell me a little bit about, you know, growing up? Were you very musical back then?
I think the musical side comes through my mum. She was always kind of tinkering on a piano. She had a killer left hand when it came to playing boogie woogie. And I think as a kid, I used to just watch her doing sort of playing rock and roll kind of 12 bar, because she could play anything, but she loved a bit of 12 bar. So I used to listen to her playing anything from sort of Chuck Berry to, you know, In the Mood and stuff like that. And it just fascinated me watching her doing it, because literally, if you saw her left hand kind of like going up and down the keys, it was mesmerizing. So my mum was always like the biggest influence for me. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Then literally, God bless her. My father died when I was quite young, about 8 or 9. He was like 46 years old, died of cancer, and it just left a massive hole in the family. But my mum sort of supported me through kind of music, you know. So
yeah.
She said to me, do you know what I mean? I said, Mum, I really want a drum kit. Da 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 da. I must have been about 9 or 10. Well, obviously 9 or 10. And she just said, okay. So off we went, and we bought this Premier kit, and I set it up in the front room, and she just used to let me go crazy on this kit. And so, you know, music was there as a therapy, I think, more than anything. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and,
I totally get you. I lost my mum actually in her 40s, and for me, actually, music actually got me through quite a lot of the hard times. So, yeah,
I think music, that is the power of music, is it's kind of there for us to kind of do multiple different things in our lives with. Do you know what I mean? Whether it's getting through kind of hard periods of time or going to the gym. I mean, I think we sort of kind of take it for granted just how powerful it kind of is. And in times like we're in at the moment, you know what I mean, again, sort of, you know, it's music will be the thing that kind of gets us through. I was just watching some videos of an Italian DJ set up, and they're all kind of like in their houses, and this guy's on a balcony, he's got a deck set up, and they're having like a proper rave. So they're all on the balconies just going off, blowing whistles and this, that and the other. And that's the human spirit, right? You know, they've been sort of isolated, but they're still kind of like using music to bring themselves together.
Yeah,
it is a beautiful thing to see. It really is.
Yeah. No, I saw some of that on social media as well, because they were kind of calling it a flash mob, but it wasn't really, was it? It was a coming together, and like through music. And
it was literally people coming out on their balconies and just whooping and going, look, we're still alive, we're celebrating life, and that's what music does. Again, if you go back to the, you know, 40s, you know, Dame Vera Lynn basically was doing that for the troops, you know what I mean, was lifting spirit. She was going out to places like Burma where no one was going, because they were like pretty hairy zones, and just kind of going out there selflessly and supporting the kind of the efforts of the soldiers to go, look, you know, we'll get through this and you'll be home. You know, if you're a soldier sitting in that situation where you kind of like you're facing, you know, whatever is coming at you, and you've just got that one little hope that you can get through it, it could be the difference between you sort of kind of like pushing on or giving up. Do you know what I mean?
So, completely. So just want to kind of just revolve back again to kind of where you started out as well.
Yeah.
So you've been in the music industry for a while, haven't you? And you've had hits in the UK and Australia as well.
Yeah. So I started in bands in when I was like, again, sort of 16. I came out kind of just not really knowing what I wanted to do, and then just being kind of up in the air with things, and then deciding sort of like I was put in a factory because I really wanted to do electronics, right? Just service in electronics and, you know, fixing stuff, do you know what I mean? And there wasn't really kind of like much going on in terms of like apprenticeships then. So they ended up, I just got stuck in a factory soldering, and I was just sitting there kind of soldering these PCB boards thinking, well, this is fun. and came into my mind. I was like, well, what are you going to do? What do you want to do? And I thought, I just got to be in a band. So yeah. I went out and just went for some auditions and got a gig basically as a vocal. Funny enough, I went for a job as a drummer first and didn't get it. And then I was so gutted because I thought, I'm actually a really good drummer. I've been playing for ages. And they were like, nah, sorry. And then so I was a bit of a letdown. And then a week later, I sat there and I thought, oh, my God, what am I going to do now? I thought, well, I can sing a little bit. So I went for an audition as a vocalist for another band. These were in Brighton, by the way, because I grew up in Brighton. So there was like, you know, so and I got this audition sort of with a band sort of being the vocalist. And that was it. We were sort of kind of just out kind of gigging and touring. I mean, it was a reggae band, so we were sort of able to support quite big names in it, like Steel Pulse and Misty and Roots. There was a place called the Top Rank Suite at the bottom of West Street. And so we were getting a lot of the kind of support slides. So I was kind of mixing with some really interesting people at quite an early age, and I kind of just knew from there. The band was sort of, they were a lot older than me. They were probably in their 20s, mid-20s. But they were cool enough to let me kind of develop as a songwriter. So I was bringing in all these lyrics and stuff that I was constantly trying to write. And so we actually built up a set quite quickly with the words I was bringing in. And then little by little, kind of obviously just, you know, trying to get a bit more kind of clever with the chord side of things. And luckily my mum's had that piano, you see, in the front, in the dining room. So I used to just sit there plonking. Everyone was like, oh, shut up. Shut up. I use my brother. Oh, you plink plonking all the time, do you know what I mean? And annoying everyone, do you know what I mean? But because I didn't really have any training, I just literally sat there and just tried to work out, remember what my mum was doing. And she showed me a few chords. And that, I remember she showed me a few chords in the key of C, and then that was it. I wrote my first couple of tunes, like, just by plinking and plonking, like my brother used to say. Stop plinking and plonking.
That's amazing, isn't it? Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, so, you know, as I say, it all comes back to my mum really basically being a, you know, just very supportive of kind of, you know, the musical aspect. And even when I got signed to EMI a few years later with an act called Taste of Paradise. And she was just so, so happy that she was, like, taking the CD everywhere with her to play with, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
because she used to be a nurse. She was a nurse in the Brighton General. She was like, she used to run the kind of like the psychiatric units there, drug rehabilitation and all that. And she was like, so she'd run in with the CDs and she'd be playing it to all the kind of the patients and people that she was working with. And, you know, she's just really cool, you know. Like,
yeah.
She'd even go to the, like, because we, in the area that we kind of grew up in, there was like a, it was like a little village. It's called Kemp Town, right? Mm. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. And it was just like a little tiny village back then. It was just literally, there was a bakery and, you know, a grocery shop and a butcher's and that. And she'd be just going in there with like this little ghetto plaster. Going,
have
a listen to my son, do you know what I mean? This little house track. She's like a little mobile DJ dropping this house track, reach out. Kind of, and I think a lot of people could think, like, this woman's mad, do you know what I mean? But there she was, just like, but she should have been in PR, mate.
Yeah,
she would have been awesome.
I was just
going to
say, she sounds like your best marketing strategy
person. Seriously, mate. Seriously. So, yeah, I and then, you know, little by little, she lent me some money to buy a studio, because I got my first studio then, do you know what I mean? And so I had a little Tascam 38 reel-to-reel half-inch tape, which actually I wouldn't mind having now. It's that good a quality still. And I had a little 16-track desk, and then just little bits, like I had a little W30 kind of Roland keyboard. Like, all the Prodigy stuff was done on a W30, like early days Prodigy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So that was, if you talk to Liam Howlett about W30, he'd have a massive grin on his face, because
that's
what they were using. No, seriously, those keyboards are still good. They're still, if you go on eBay and try and get a W30, those early Roland keyboards are really worth things. Like, the things that have really held their kind of value would be like the TB-303s, SH-101s, and the 106s, like the Roland 106s. All those keyboards are mint. You know, mint, mate. Absolutely. If you've got one sitting in your studio, don't let it go. They're the greatest.
No, I don't think we have, but, yeah, you never know. Maybe in a dusty cupboard somewhere.
So, yeah, that's how I learned how to sort of operate. And then, obviously, getting signed to... We were initially going to get signed to Big Life when Jazz... I don't know if you remember Jazz Summers. He was, proper maverick, mate. Do you know what I mean? Like, he broke Wham with... in China, sort of back in the day with Simon Napier Bell, who Simon's like another legend of the industry. He had like Mark Bolan and
some big T-Rex fans you may know.
Yeah, T-Rex. Obviously had T-Rex. He had like another big one in the 60s as well. I think it was the Yardbirds. He had the Yardbirds as well. So he, you know, that guy had a hit in every kind of decade, I think, up until sort of like the 90s. So jazz was amazing, and he wanted to sign this Taste of Paradise act, so he grabbed us in to tie up this deal. And then he shot off to America with Soup Dragons and one of them bands, do you know what I mean?
Or
the Verve, one of them bands, do you know what I mean? And then we were sort of left in the air in this studio in Livingston. It was called Livingston Studios up in Wood Green in sort of North London. And we were just left to our own devices in this amazing SSL room with an engineer to just be demoing it. I mean, you'd just die for that now, do you know what I mean? It's like, you're talking like a £1,500 a day studio then, like mid-90s, do you know what I mean? So we're sitting in there just making whatever we thought was gone of the next single. And then we get a call from Chrysalis. And they were like, what are you doing with this record? And we hadn't signed this deal. I know that this really annoyed Jazz a lot, do you know what I mean? But then Chris said, look, can you come in? Because we really want this record, do you know what I mean? And they ended up offering us a lot of money to sign with them. And we did it. And then when Jazz got back, he was like, really angry. So there was a bit of a vibe going on there. But the thing about signing to Chrysalis, it was like, you know, you walked into those offices and there was like the Specials records on the wall, Blonde. I met Debbie Harry, you know, it was all those kind of characters, kind of like, you know, Terry Hall, you know, all those dudes that, you know. And so walking up that, when we first went up for that first meeting, and you see all these two-tone records and sort of stuff that you've kind of like, you bought as a kid. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then you see your heroes on these walls, like, we're all platinum, this, that, and the other. So Elvis Costello, it was just like a no-brainer. We just thought, we did what we did, you know what I mean? And I'm kind of, in some ways, kind of glad, and in some ways I feel sort of sad that we kind of upset Jazz a little bit, because, again, as I say, it was a real absolute... Again, those guys are... They were mavericks, you know what I mean? They were real characters, do you know what I'm saying? And
the world's changed a lot now, hasn't it?
It has a lot. You know, like Sharon Osbourne's kind of dad, and those kind of characters are sort of long gone now, aren't they? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So, it's, like you say, it's a changing landscape, and in some ways it's a change. It's changed for a lot of the better. But as I say, there were some amazing characters, and I think we were very lucky that we sort of saw that industry as it was, you know, the organic kind of music industry before it became totally sort of Napstered and digitalized and sort of like the end. I think I could see sort of like, I'd been out to Australia as well. I'd worked out in Australia sort of like late 90s and ended up sort of working for BMG and Festival Records, making, just remixing loads of their artists. And then when I got back to the UK, sort of like, I think it was like 99, 2000, it was almost changed then. Like the advances had kind of gone down the tubes. Before that, get dropped from one label, go knock on another door and get signed again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was that, you know, at the top of Ladbroke Grove, for instance, there was it's still probably there now, Kensal Rise. There's a building there called a Kensal building, and literally you'd walk in there and there was just one record company. It was like a big block with one record company, and literally every door was Strictly Rhythm, Tomato Records, you know, smaller independent labels, Amata Disco. All those labels were sitting there. Do you know what I'm saying? So you could literally just go knocking on a door, go, look, I've got a new record I've just come out of the studio with, do you know what I mean? And they go, yeah, come in and then drop it. And then you'd be like, yeah, well, can we do something with it? And, you know, things were a lot easier in terms of getting deals back then. But, you know, then you had the sort of marketing war that would go on as a result of that. And there was the whole kind of like, you know, if you couldn't get into HMV because it cost a fortune, or if you did, you know what I mean? It was a lot harder in some ways. It was a lot more structured. And so now you've got, what do? You bang out stuff to Spotify, don't you? And then you're trying to get playlists, which is, it's a different kind of way of doing things. But, you know, at the same time, it's cooler. Because obviously you can reach a lot more people a lot quicker, do you know what I'm saying? But you've got to go hard. You, like any time, you've just still got to go hard. and pushing those streams and doing what we're doing, which is basically telling people you've got a record out. The radio is still very important.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, they keep saying, don't they, radio, is it going to have a place? But it's such an important medium at the end of the day. I think there will always be a place for radio. I hope there will always be a place for radio. But
I think you can definitely take the word hope out of that and say there will be. But I think that radio will become more underground in terms of sort of like the shows that you're doing, for instance. Do you know what I'm saying? I think, and I don't mean to piss the BBC off, do you know what I mean? But I think that kind of model will definitely have to relook at the way that they are operating, because they're still doing the gatekeeper routine too much, do you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And keeping kind of a lot of new material out and just sticking with the kind of the stuff that is coming through from the majors and from the certain PR companies that, you know, if you go through those PR companies, you can get through to the... Do you know what I mean?
I do,
but that costs money still. So that's the... they're running the old model, you're running the new model, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, all the sort of DJs that I'm talking to are sort of like, they're the underground maverick kind of like will play new material. That's why you have a future, because you're supporting the future. You're not kind of blocking it and going, well, we're only going to play this because it's on this label, or
exactly.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100% get what you're saying. Gerard, we're going to have to just go to some ads. There are going to be a minute. We're going to come back and we're going to talk all about your brand new EP.
Wonderful.
Joining me on the phone, we have Dora. Hello, Dora. How are you doing?
I'm all good. Yeah, no, it's wonderful being here, having a good chat with you.
So,
to be honest with you, do you know what? I keep forgetting I'm on the actual radio. I think like you're in the front room with me just having a natter, do you know what I mean?
Nice cup of tea would have gone down well, wouldn't it?
You know what I mean? Like, I'm totally relaxed, maybe too relaxed. It's great. It's fantastic being here, and you're doing a great job there. Everyone on Facebook who are tuning in are just going, they're really loving it.
Oh, really? Oh, that's absolutely lovely. And, Mickey Mezza, one of our presenters, actually has just been in touch on our WhatsApp group and said he's really enjoying the interview as well, which is lovely as well. So thank you, Mickey.
Awesome. Thank you.
Right. So I'm going to ask you a little bit about your new album, but first I want to ask you about your genre of music. And I hate saying the word genre sometimes, because it kind of puts people in boxes, doesn't it?
It's like brands, isn't it? Like when they talk about brands.
Yeah. What is your genre? What is your brand? But
yeah, what is your brand? What's your brand? How do you want to spread your brand awareness? That's what the sort of, when you talk to American PR companies, that's sort of buzzwords, and we need a Madeline on, you know, the Foo Fighters. And you're like, oh mate, please.
No, exactly. but I'm going to ask you about, I mean, because there's this, so this word, get away from the word genre, rock step.
Yes.
Tell me about rock step, because
I kind of made it up.
Why not?
I was sitting in the studio with Harvey Summers, who actually is another genius, totally underrated genius, probably one of the best producers I've come across in a long, long time. Just the right side of kind of creative, but also, and you won't mind me saying this, he's got nerd vibes going on, do you know what I mean? But he's just a creative, he's just a genius. Like if I say to him, oh, you know, I could say, look, just literally I need to drop like 3 dB off that, off 20 hertz, and then bang like a third, a 3 second delay on that vocal sort of, but can you take off like 20 hertz off the top? Boom, it's done.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He's so clever. Like, and he's got the studio that he's got down in a place called Bexhill, which is in East Sussex. It's just like, it's like walking into a TARDIS. It's just like, because he's just a real collector of gear.
Oh,
so
lovely.
He's got the old desk out of Olympia Studios.
Okay.
So it's obviously had like David Bowie, Elton John, God knows who's gone through that desk.
Still working.
Queen, I think, also went through that desk as well. So there's a little bit of like, whoa, you touch that and you're like, you get a bit of a vibe off it, do you know what I mean? So he's just a real genius. So we were sitting in the studio basically, and I just thought, I said, look, you know, we're trying to get this mixture of rock and roll, so it's like it's live but mixing kind of like, because we both come out of the dance, we came out of the rock world, but we were sort of really influenced in the 90s by the dance tip. So it was a mixture of kind of, I didn't think anyone had actually sort of nailed that sound as well as it could have been done. I mean, there was the Mondays, of course, with Paul Oakenfold, who they kind of did that crossover, do you know what I'm saying? There was a few people, but I just felt we could nail it with the sort of the melodic structure and the way the vocals kind of fit in those tracks, which they sound like rock tunes, but they've got like kind of EDM stuff flowing in and out of it. And So I just called it, I thought, we need to come up with a new genre here, and I just come up with a word, rock step. So, yeah, I've just been pushing it, like, this whole new genre. It's like a, you know, one of them things, you know what I'm saying? Mixing rock and roll and EDM, basically, that's it.
Well, I love it. I think it sounds great. I mean, brilliant stuff.
I mean, I think if you listen to Night Stepper, for instance, that is it for me. That is like the ultimate kind of rock step kind of tune where you can bounce to it. And live, you know, it's great. All those tracks are so good live as well. They really kind of get, you know... Do you know what? A lot of the dance music for me just lacked mid-range. It lacked guitars.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. If I listen to a dance track, I'm like, I really want to hear some dirty guitar in it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah,
but then
totally
if I listen to sort of metal... I'm missing the breaks.
Mm.
Do you get what I'm saying?
I do, because, I mean, I've got quite a diverse music taste, and I think that's exactly what you're saying, is that's probably each, you know, each different music genre has that pace, but it doesn't cross over enough, does it? So
I mean, that's the deal. And I think, you know what, I did an interview this week for IMA Spotlight, which is like an independent sort of magazine, and I was just saying that I think that the genres will get blurred a lot more. I think, you know, from classical to rock to, obviously classical and rock have already blurred, but I think like metal and dance, and I think all those, I think the way that we kind of like interpret music as being these separate identities, I think those scenes will blur in, they'll blur into each other. And the reason I can say that is that, interestingly enough, those tracks on New Kind of Normal have been supported by metal radio stations like Kerrang and Planet Rock and various, like, Metal Mayhem down in Portsmouth, and loads of other metal stations have been playing tracks like Phenomenal, Heart-Shaped Hill, you know, Night Stepper and various other tracks. But then I've had dance stations playing the remixes, or they've been playing some of those other tracks that have got, you know, maybe a less harsher guitar kind of tip. And so do you know what I'm saying? It's like this one record is actually sort of getting supported from stations that might not necessarily play, like, I don't know, a dance station might not necessarily play the Foos, do you know what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah.
Whereas a dance station or a rock station might not play, I don't know, whatever kind of dance kind of tip you want to say, do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's what I'm saying. So it proves that sort of one record can work in different arenas. Do you know what I mean? So we're talking about, I think it's all about communication and breaking down kind of stereotypes of what you think should be and what can be. And I think that sort of music is one of those things where limitations must be destroyed at all costs, because that's how you break through the new into the new.
Yeah.
And that's all we're trying to do, is actually just blur the lines a little bit creatively, so we can, you know, this country's always been amazing at creating new things, but I feel at the moment, because of the way things are and people are kind of stuck in their little worlds, that things are slightly stagnating a little bit. And that's where me and Harvey are trying to just rough the scene up a little bit by kind of going, look, you know, we can, you know, like at the moment we're doing a little drum, like there's a track called The Beat on the album, which is like drum and bass with this dirty ass rock kind of riff going on. So, and again, sort of, you know, it's just mixing and merging. So drum and bass heads are going, oh, actually that's kind of interesting. It's something new or something different. And that's it. As an artist, that's what you have to be doing. There's no point in me going, oh, I'll go and listen to sort of what's in the top 40 now and putting out anything that sounds anything like that. What's the point? There's no point. Or listening to sort of like what Kerrang are playing and going, well, I better fall in with what the metal boys are doing. What is the point?
Yeah, I mean, you could be influenced by it, but
exactly.
Like you're saying, it's time for something new, isn't it?
Of course it is. And the thing is that the more you kind of look at stuff, the more you think, it's just, I'm not saying this to sort of kind of be funny, but it becomes a cliche.
Mm.
Do you know what I'm saying? Anything that's done over the top, like rock and roll, is a cliche. If it's done with, it becomes a parody of itself. If it's taken too seriously, of like, you listen to a lot of rock and rock records that are made, and you'll go, well, that just sounds like a parody of a million other things I've heard. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm not going to even mention names, but put on Kerrang now. I love Kerrang, by the way.
Yeah, we totally actually.
Put on Kerrang now, and you'll hear the same band over and over again.
Yeah.
Because they're just going, this is the issue, right? And radio has a little bit to take for this, because they'll go, well, this is what the style we're going to play now. Like, for instance, like, I've had a lot of, this is the truth. I'm going to tell you the truth, right? I've had a lot of DJs go, not really fitting in with what I'm playing at the moment. Then you listen to what they're playing, and they're playing the same record over and over again, and you go, well, that's weird, because basically what's that saying to every band, that they've got to sound like that for you to support them?
Yeah, and it takes artists like yourself to kind of like push against the boundaries there, and
you're not popular to everybody.
No.
You know what I'm saying? But at the same time,
that's life, isn't it?
Do you know what I mean? You're not popular to everybody because they're going, oh, it's not this or it's not that, or it doesn't fit in with my little kind of view of the world. Oh, you know, it's rattling my kind of sensibilities a bit. But as I said, what is the point of us doing me stepping into a studio and making a record that you've already heard?
Yeah.
You know,
so Whiskey and Honey it really is kind of, you know, taking that next step forward.
I mean, again, you know, here's the next tip. It's called Gothic Soul. On those tracks like Lights, for instance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Whiskey, we've done the rock step. We're into this whole another gamut that we're looking at called like this Gothic Soul, which is like this deeper kind of vocal vibe. It's that whole vocal approach is allowing me to tell stories in a different way. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I'm a storyteller at the end of the day. I tell stories.
Because you're an author as well, aren't you?
I'm an author as well, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've put out a couple of books. But so I'm always, again, I'm always looking at the storyline. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, we could meet for a coffee and I'll be going, oh, that's interesting, like you could say something and I go, oh, that's an interesting characteristic, and that will give me an idea for something. Well, I could write something about, you know, this maverick DJ that goes out and changes the world with, do you know what I mean, and then write. Do you
love
see what
it.
I'm saying?
I love it. Please write it.
Yeah, so I'm kind of going, I'm constantly looking at the storylines of what makes things, so there's a subliminal text to everything I do, you know what I'm saying? So, like, for instance, Lights, which I think is quite an interesting record, and again, from a point of view of where we are now, like in this current climate, that song is really about saying, like, having someone there with you to say, listen, however dark it gets, I'm not going to let the lights go out on you.
Yeah.
I'm saying. So that is what that's about. And it was actually inspired by Robin Williams, who, when he committed suicide, it kind of broke my heart, because I just thought he'd given us so much happiness and joy, and yet in his final moment he was on his own. And I just thought, if somebody had just, I'm not in his inner circle, but maybe if somebody just got there and just maybe said the right thing, or the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or showed him. Listen, life is about options, right? It's about having options. If you can see that there's a way forward, then it gives you hope, right? If you can see there's two ways forward, then you've got even more hope. Do you know what I'm saying? If you see there's no options, you're sitting in a situation where you become scared, frightened, and then you make a decision that might not be the one that was the right thing. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do, and there's so many people out there in that same situation right now, isn't there? So
this is what we have to be doing, is just showing people, look, with a song like Lights, it's about saying, look, you've got options. It might seem dark, but you've got options. Do you know what I'm saying? You've just got to dig in, take a deep breath. Hopefully, if the, you know, I don't know, I'll use the word God, but if you know, if God's on your, you know, with you, and there's someone there with you, or whatever you use as a way of kind of like communicating with the big kind of thing that surrounds us, this world. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
as long
sure.
as you've got, as long as you've got someone that you can communicate with, that can just give you a kind of like a little bit of a chance to go, yeah, okay, it's bad right now, but it might not be like that in a couple of weeks' time.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And
yeah,
that's what
absolutely.
We need right now.
Yeah. And totally, and especially in the times we're in at the moment, a lot of scared people at the moment.
Do you know what? I really, really want to reach those people who are panic buying and are doing all those sort of things. And I want to say to them, look, this will pass. Just all you got to do is follow the directives that people are saying to you.
Yeah, exactly.
And just take your foot off the panic pedal. I mean, to be fair, we went out down to Brighton yesterday and everyone was just doing exactly what they normally do.
This is
the great British public, mate. Not even batting an eyelid.
No, just carrying on regardless.
Absolutely, mate. Do you know what I mean? And that's the thing. It's like, you know, I've talked to a lot of people. They're like, well, you know, it's particularly sort of like, you know, the older generation who sort of grew up during the war years. They're like, well, no, what are you worried about? You know, the older folk are sort of, you know, I've got a lovely lady who sort of like just lives up the road, and I was talking to her yesterday, and she's going, well, do you know what I mean? She goes, what else are we supposed to do? You just got to get on with it.
Exactly. Go and sit in the garden, just forget about it all, you know, turn everything off and just chill out and, yeah.
And that is it. I think the word garden is really, if you haven't got a garden, go and find
somewhere,
a field.
Park.
If you haven't got a field, go and find a park. Do you know what I'm saying? And just like you said, just go and just switch off, turn off, listen to the birds. I know it sounds trippy kind of vibe. Just listen to the birds and just be quiet.
Remove yourself from it all and just, yeah.
You know what
if
I mean?
You can, then, yeah.
This is a good time for people to just kind of like work out what's real and what isn't real.
Exactly.
At the end of the day.
Right, before we end, because we're going to be running out of time quite
soon. No worries, man.
And I could talk to you forever, actually.
I could talk to you forever. So let's do it again.
Tell me, what's next for you in 2020? So the EP's out.
Sure. So yeah, Whiskey and Honey's out. It'll be out next month. We're looking at shooting a film for it and, again, another video for it in New York City. Again, sort of Whiskey's about somebody that gives up on the real things in their life and chasing momentary highs and leads to a kind of regret. So we've got this kind of leaving Las Vegas kind of idea. So we're going to try and sort of work something in the middle of this because they're on lockdown at the moment as well. You know, so, but my guys, the guys that I shoot, they shoot my films and stuff, they're just proper maverick. They're just like, they'll go out and do whatever they want to do. So there might be some interesting kind of film footage that they get as a result of New York being completely empty.
Yeah, I mean, don't often see that, do you? Other than in the
You know what I mean? Like, you'd have to... do you imagine how much you'd have to pay to shut New York down?
Can you imagine,
This is the time to make a movie.
Yeah, get
it. You know what I'm saying?
And
so that's out. So we're making films on that. And then I'm in the studio now just literally just writing. I've got the next album, basically, sort of like about half an album's worth of material. I'm just jamming it at the moment. I'm not really kind of, like, worrying too much. I'm all about, basically, does it work as a piece? So I could sit in front of you with a guitar or piano and sort of play it.
Yeah.
So I don't kind of get too deep into sort of production until I've got the song really performing.
Okay,
but
nice.
I've got about 6 or 7 songs that are kind of I'm working with at the moment. So yeah, we'll just be looking at recording the next kind of EP, hopefully be out by the summertime or sort of late summer, and then just keeping on, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, our job is about keeping morale, so if people were kind of like need me in any situation to sort of to help out or play a show or do something just to raise morale, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'll do it. So yeah.
How do people get in touch with you?
So you can, in my socials basically, my label's called Kusha Deep, that's KushaDeep. If you do a search, like all my socials will come up, and obviously DAR.RA, New Kind of Normal, or Whiskey and Honey. Just do a search on that and that'll come up, and my Facebooks and all the rest of it, and just hit me up if you fancy it. If you want to tune into the tracks, they're all on YouTube at the moment. Whiskey's on YouTube. Just check it out and see if you can just lose yourself for a few moments and,
well,
and enjoy.
We're going to lose ourselves for a few moments because we're going to play Whiskey and Honey. Can I ask you one favour before we
end? Absolutely.
Can you introduce it for us?
This is Whiskey and Honey by Dara, and I hope you're going to enjoy it, and just be safe, and we'll get through this real soon. Take care.